What am I going to say about how you are a genius or how you are whatever? You think that I forgot what I said here about Susan. I said, Susan, what would you think if Randy, your dearly beloved Randy, the boy you think is just the greatest thing since Carter had toes or something, what do you think about him if Randy were to come up to you and say, Susan, I'll see you in 3 months, and not say another word? Bye. And Susan would say, how do I do this thing all by myself? There's so much to do, to do. And if Susan would not think that she was so important and realize that everything is done in its perfect time, and that her magical staff is always there, and that's all of you, and whatever needs to be done will be done in a beautiful way, she would have it done all the time that way. Or what if Randy would say, Susan, how are you doing? She says, well, I meant to tell you, Randy, I'm going to leave tomorrow and I'll be back in about 2 months, you know. Oh, okay. He doesn't mistrust her. He doesn't think she's going to do something improper, nor she that he's going to do something improper. Our human curiosity, which destroys us, makes us demand to know all the little intricacies that make the world go round. And because we have to know these intricacies that make the world go around, we are bound by them. And being bound by them, we are not free spirits. I'm living in heaven right now, you know? Well, if you're living in heaven right now, you don't have to proclaim it. But it's okay. But you don't have to. Just do it. Just do it. And if I say, sing with me, she sang with me. And I said, you're great. She said, oh, I'm not. Shut up. Don't tell me you're not on tune, because I don't hear you not being on tune. I only hear you having a great time, and wonderfully having a great time. Believe in yourself. Now, you'll see my point in a second. If you ever, for one instant, thought that God is all and everything and everywhere, in everything and through everything, and that God is a dog and a cat and a house and a tree and a rock and a rat and a people and me, if you ever thought that, see how it rhymes? If you ever thought that, then you really haven't thought that you're God. And is God ever panicked? Is God ever worried that things won't get done? No. Is God ever upset with himself? No. Itself. You see, if I can get you to acknowledge what you already know, that you're God, that you're wonderful, that you're fantastic, then you'll just say, so it is, so it is, so it is. Whatever thought comes to your mind, so it is. But no. You've put into your mind the idea that it has to go through the mechanism of humanity. It has to go through certain avenues to accomplish itself. And that's not true. That's not true. I asked them a question the other night. Terrible question, which I shouldn't really ask anybody.
How many days does it take to create the world?
Quick!
So how many? How many days did the Bible
days?
Say?
Oh, the Bible say. Was it seven, six? I don't know.
What's your first word? Her first word was seven. 7 days it took God to create the world. But what did he do on the first 6 days? He created the world. Never did. What did he do on the seventh day?
He rested.
He rested. You call that working? You see, even the Bible, which we use as a guide to our spiritual growth and development, and as wonderful as it is, we don't even listen to it. We don't even read it. We don't even know what it says. In the first chapter of the Bible, God created male and female, created he both. And then second chapter, we have them having Adam and Eve coming along. Now, why am I saying these things? I'm only saying these things because, Randy, I require you at this moment and from this moment forward to listen to the Bible within you and follow it all the days of your life.
Also.
Only. And he says, okay. Now, I'm going to ask Randy a very potent question. What's on the second page of your Bible?
Enjoy yourself.
Think. Don't think. Say. Pop.
Enjoy yourself.
That's good. Enjoy yourself. You see, when you start thinking to be logical and reasonable, you are not acting like God. God is. All things are. And we want to express the isness and the are-ness, if we can say that, of all that is. And if we start logically thinking about it, we turn off the experience. We turn off the magic. We turn off our godliness. It's still there, but we hide it and pretend that we're not God. We pretend that we're not the allness of the universe. We pretend that we're not the beauty and the wholeness and the goodness of everything that is. We pretend. That's so silly, isn't it? Isn't that silly? Okay. So if you would listen, or had listened in that 3 minutes there, you would have heard me say that your God, no panic, no rush, no problem, you're just as happy as can be, and you would be as happy as can be. You would not be concerned where he went, or where you went, or where anybody else went, because all of us would be doing that which was our highest and best. She loves her son. And she would love to have her nose in her son's business 100% of the time. And she'd love to say, Carl, where are you going tonight? Carl, where are you going this morning? Carl, what sort of food are you eating? Carl, are you washing your clothes properly? Carl, are you working on your computers? Carl, are you taking time so you don't get your tongue over? Blah, blah, blah. Carl, are you doing, you know, and Carl would say, Mother, please get off my back, you know, as we all do. So when our humanity, and that's what gets on our back, when our humanity gets on our back, we have to be at peace and recognize that we're God, we're divine. And then the humanity gets off our back, and then with the snap of our finger, all things are manifest, and manifest beautifully. Now we're supposed to have answered questions or something. What is it? What's our topic today?
Finding solutions.
Finding solutions. Well, I think that we had a good introduction to finding solutions here. Do any of you understand what I've just said?
We hope so.
We hope so. Truly, when you can let go and let God, that doesn't mean you're not doing anything. You follow the divine within. All right, I have a son. He's born in 53, and he had a tough time at school. But he loves airplanes, and he designed ultralight airplanes, and he builds them and sells them all over the world. And he has to have his time to fly, because flying is very important for him, and he's got to get up and fly. Well, while he's building, the idea came to him, hey, I don't like the engines I have to buy. I have to buy these engines from the Canadians and the Japanese, the Honda, this, and they're too heavy, too light, they're too short-lived, you know, they burn out too quickly, and the cylinders and pistons have problems. And he says, there's a better way. Ding, 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 ding. He not only went ding, 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 he pressed the computer buttons and had it come out. He designed 12-inch engine, which had 8 cylinders, using just the little engines that they have for model airplanes. And he designed it with the certain gadget inside that makes the pistons run how they should. He designed it in such a way that the spark burned the fuel absolutely, completely at the peak, so that there was no pollution. It's tested it. No pollution. and it burns 1.6 tenths gallons per hour at 100 miles an hour. Not bad. So that was his prototype. So then he built an 18-inch model, and he has it all perfectly designed. He's using 3D computer setups to understand it. And he is having it work on these pistons and having it work. He took it to the Experimental Aircraft Association in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, as he was making his show about his airplanes and so forth. They crowded around him, unbelieving that such a thing could be. They wrote him up in two magazines, thinking that it could not be. People came with money and said, let me invest. And he said, no. He said, first I want to get the patents done. First I want to make sure everything is correct. And he did that. He's doing it. It's almost done. And he has a place in Taiwan, I believe, or wherever it was, that he wants to build it for him. Where was it that said?
Yeah, I think it was Taiwan.
Taiwan, something like that. And I don't pay attention to the details. He just showers them out on me and tells me what's going on. And the newspaper article talks about it, too. And the magazine article, too. So my son is a brilliant child, because he's my child, of course. And his mother and I both had a lot of education, and we love school, and we've taught and done things all over the world in educating and teaching in schools and universities on this philosophy and stuff. And we just had a good time. And he never was much for education, never was much for school, never much. But he loves ideas. A man who is born with imagination on fire in his head, and he's letting it come out, and he's doing beautiful work with it. But he listens to the divine within. I would be sitting at my computer, my typewriter, and he would come into my office and he'd say, Dad, do you know what you're listening to on the radio there? I said, it's just the music from background. He said, listen to it. And so I'd listen to it, and it was some pretty sad music. And usually I just listened to classics. And he said, yeah, that's what you listen to. That's what you're putting in your mind. You know, he's telling me this, and I'm going to supposed to be teaching him this. But he's telling me. He is applying these things. Every person who comes up and meets him thinks that he's the greatest guy they've ever met. I tell people how wonderful he is, and they say, sure, it's your son. You know, no wonder you talk about your son like that. And I say, no, it's okay. And then they meet him. They say, you didn't say enough. Now, I'm not trying to do this to paint a great picture of my son. He does that well enough. I'm doing this to say, he listens within. To tell you another illustration, you know the story of Richard Bach, of course. And Richard Bach was walking down the street, and this voice says, John's looking for seagulls. And he said, you know? And then finally he sat down and wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He got half of it done. And then, bah! It was gone. You see, as he was writing, he's saying, boy, am I damn good. My writing is fantastic. This story is really neat. Hey, this is flowing out of me like popcorn, and I'm great. I am fantastic. I'm good. You forgot the divine in you is fantastic. Don't go making this outer man into some sort of a saint that you're going to worship and that you're going to think is so wonderful. 7 years he had to wait until the voice started talking again to him. And after 7 years he wrote it. And then he thought, man, am I good. He didn't get the message, John. And so then he tried to sell it. And you know the story. He tried to sell it and it wouldn't sell. Nobody wanted it. It was the children's story. It was a stupid thing. It became a bestseller. But whenever we let our pride, whenever we let our feeling of superiority that we're better than somebody else get in the way, and all of us have that from time to time, because we feel so proud of something that we have accomplished, we don't realize that it's God in us, as us, doing this, that has fulfilled these things. And if we could keep our relationship with God, if we could keep our relationship with the divine in us, and not lose sight that it is this greater self of ourself that is manifesting itself and showing itself to us. If we can just keep that awareness, you're not going to keep it going to any traditional churches or even this church. because some of the songs you sing here need to be touched up just a little bit too. But basically, it's good. And I read on the back of the bulletin today, and I thought, oh goodness, that shouldn't have been there. But so be it. Most people don't get to the back of the bulletin anyhow. But yet, that's there. That's there. And it's a lot of otherness. So it's still running good. So we want to help ourselves by having humility, by having peace of mind, by having the realization that there is a God. There is a divine beingness. And that divine beingness is everywhere. And that divine beingness doesn't say, I'm just for Randy or just for Susan, because they are ministers, and like many of you are ministers too. But it doesn't say just that. It says, I'm for everybody. Anyone. I wonder who else said that. Knock. Jeff, how did it go? Knock.
And it shall be open.
Huh?
Knock and it shall be open.
And?
Seek and you shall find.
Seek and you shall find. And?
Knock, seek, ask.
Ask what?
And you shall receive.
Knock, seek, and ask.
Receive.
What did we say today? We said, claim it. Claim it. Claim your good. Claim the divine in you. Knock, seek, and ask. Jesus said those things, but Jesus is certainly not anybody we're going to follow. Because we say the words of Jesus are not important. That's what we say.
Really?
Who are you?
Hi, call myself
God.
Dorothy.
God.
Oh, God. God. Okay.
Right. Who are you, God?
God.
Do you think God would ever say, I can't sing? Do you think God would ever say, I have trouble finding notes? No way!
Okay.
God creates notes that we have never even heard before. I mean, we have the tonic scales, and we have the music of the universe and all that kind of stuff, but we haven't even heard all the music that exists. Even Illusions with Richard Bach, Donald Simoda is working on the airplane there or something, and the music of the skies and the celestial and hemispheres are singing away. And what did Donald Simoda say?
Turn
quiet! Turn it off! And then it still plays lightly, and I mean all the way off, you know? We are in charge. And we turn off the music. And you, I have a lady in Switzerland, I mentioned before, who could not hold a note. And I said to her, Gertrude, go and take music lessons, because she just could not find the notes. So she took music lessons. Gertrude is retired at 65 or so, and she took music lessons from a music professional lady who was an opera singer of 97. And good lady. And she said, I don't know, Mrs. Suter, I'll work with you for a week or two, and we'll just see. Well, she's still working with her. It's now 2 years later. And Gertrude is in the major choir of Switzerland, singing on television and radio, on CD records, with her picture, with everybody else in there. And she's still not much better. But she likes herself, and she loves the singing. And everybody loves her. She came to give a recital on campus at one time. We said, Gertrude, what have you been learning in your music lessons? And she says, Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, do, so, do, so, re, mi, fa, so. And 5 minutes of it. And it was glorious. It was all the more glorious because just a short time before she couldn't do that. And you see, by our believing in ourselves, who was singing in Gertrude?
God.
God. God was singing in Gertrude. And who was listening to Gertrude?
God.
God.
Where's going to get
Isn't
God?
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? So let's recognize that we're God. Let's recognize that God both sings and listens. The same eyes that God sees us are the eyes that we see God with.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the same truth. These are universal ideas. let us all recognize that we don't have to go outside of ourselves for God. We don't have to come to church for God. We come to church to be among like minds of people who support one another on our spiritual quest, on our quest of recognizing that we're God. And we support the church to maintain it and keep it there. We may not have to give it money. One of us might want to pay the mortgage every month, and another one of us might want to pay the electric bills, and another one might want to keep the coffee pot filled, and another one might want to keep the painting jobs done, or whatever else the things are done. And hey, it isn't a matter of just giving money. It's a matter of giving yourself, giving your life to it, because this is your center of spiritual growth and worship. This is your center of finding yourself, of being aware of yourself and being alert. Do you like to come here? And I say the answer is yes. You don't have to answer to me. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And some of you heard me speak a little bit before this now, and yet you still come back. Now, why did you come back? Because the things I say are silly? No. Because the things I say are exactly what you're going to try to say.
We like what we heard.
You like what you heard. That's beautiful. Thank you. And I like what I'm saying. And I like each one of you. And I am the happiest guy in the world. I am the happiest guy in the world. And I'm not happy because you make me happy. Because you have not the capacity to make me happy. I have the capacity to make me happy. And I have the capacity to make me sad, too. If I am dependent on someone else to like me, someone else to say good things about me, someone else to make me think that I'm a worthwhile person, boy, oh boy, oh boy. On campus, I have a sign, a big sign. And I put it up in front of everybody. And the sign says, "This is a school. This is a school. Everyone who comes here because this is a school. And in the school, first person present tense positive. Think beautiful things. Know who you are. Live who you are. Express who you are. Be who you are. Enjoy yourself. Have fun. And be yourself. That's what the school teaches." And then you come, "Oh, it hurt. I got a problem. Would you help me with my problem?" "Sure. Go right ahead." And then I listen, and you know, I listen very carefully. And then they say, and then I know that they're done. And I say, "Okay, now, what is it that you'd like to accomplish? What is it you'd like to accomplish?" I told you the story about the lady who came to campus, and I'm using this because it's a recent one, and we have them constantly happening. She came to campus with the cancer, real bad cancer. The doctor said, terminal, short time, 2 weeks more. Her own brother-in-law was the medical doctor who gave her one of these things, and other doctors gave it to her. So, she said, "Herb, I want to live." And I said, "That's great." I said, "You're whole and perfect." She says, "Now, about my case." And I said, "You mentioned one word about a condition that doesn't exist, and you're out of here. You're out. I don't care. This is a temple in which things of beauty and love and wholeness have been spoken from the time of its beginning, 1975, but since the time of its beginning, and never will any other words be spoken." Well, she was thin, a little emaciated, a little sad, a little something, and I said, "Go work on the path. Pick up stones and put them along the path, along the meditation paths." She came in, and she was naked, and she got all beautifully brown and everything. And I said, "Eat what's on your plate." Because she had a tendency to be picky choosy. And she said, "But my doctor said this isn't good for me." I said, "You eat what's on your plate. You came here because you want this program. I don't care what your problem is. Everything we serve is good." We had some children come to the ranch one time for a weekend with their mother and father, and they said, "We can't drink milk because we are lactose intolerant." And I said, "Hey, this is on top of the mountain. This is above the smog level down there in San Diego, and up above the mountain here, we don't have that. And so that's not in our milk. Our milk is so pure and beautiful, delivered directly from the valley, but our milk is so pure and beautiful. And they drank the milk, and they were never troubled again with it. And then they said, we cannot go outside without our clothes on. And we had swimming pools and stuff, and they could have their swimming suits or whatever on. And they went outside naked, because I said to them, we are above the level of the sun burning you. The sun doesn't burn you up here anymore, because this is a place where you're surrounded by God's love and perfection and purity. Well, they were, two of them were reddish haired and the other was blonde, and they ran around naked as little jaybirds, playing in the pool, water, water, you know, and they tanned to a beautiful tan, and the entire time they were there, they looked just normal, no burns, no nothing. And their mother had to wear her big muumuu so she covered every bit of her body so nothing would show to the sun. And the father, I don't know what he did. But the thing is, that was their purity. So when people come to campus, we tell them, oh yes, they sat at the table and they said, we cannot eat this spinach or this broccoli or this whatever. And I said, you eat everything that's served to you here. Because all the foods that are brought here are foods that are spiritually and wonderfully made just for the campus here. They're just for the campus, you know. And they ate them. And their father said, well, I don't eat this here. I said, you say a word like that around our campus here, you're going to go eat in the nearest restaurant. You're not going to eat with us. Because we won't tolerate that. And they ate everything healthy as bears. Healthy as bears. Happy as bears. Not one thing. And did they hate me?
No,
storytelling time of the evening. I had all these kids standing around me like a bunch of little ragamuffins, you know. Wonderful. And we had storytelling time every evening. We'd make up stories, and we'd have the witch, and one of our people liked it. She liked to be the wicked witch, you know. And but the wicked witch always had a smile on her face. But it was fun. We did crazy, beautiful things. And beautiful things happen. Well, our friend who came up there with her experience was there for 2 weeks. That's all she had time for, because she had to pack it up after that, you know. So she was there for 2 weeks. She went out on our grounds. She worked. She took their golf carts and drove through the different paths and did the things and took the shovels and did the things, and she worked on the computers and she's a computer genius. She worked on our washing windows, and I mean, you got to think of things for people to do when you got people there. Otherwise, they pour the tears and nothing good happens to them. So you got to think of things for them to do. And we had lots of good things that we thought of for them to do. At the end of 2 weeks, she started coming over to my pad and saying, Herb, I'm kind of hungry. Hungry? Yeah. Our meals are very satisfying. And I said, okay, sit down, here's some peanut butter and jelly, you know, and crackers or whatever you want, you know, good wholesome stuff. And so she would eat it, and then I'd give her some fruit and give her some apples or pears or stuff. And when she went home dancing and happy, and when she got home, they found out that she, of course, was perfect, which we knew all along. But she had to play the game. If she didn't play the game, that's her business. If she plays the game, that's her business. You see, what did I see at all times?
Perfection. Perfection of God.
Perfection. I saw her whole and perfect all the time. At no time did I see any problem. At no time did I see her with limitation for doing anything. At all times, she was whole and perfect. Whole and perfect. And she was. And then, 4 weeks later, we had a 3-month school of the master on campus. And people came, we had 20 people there, two fell out, but we had 20 people who were there for 3 months. They could not contact their family. They could not contact by telephone, by letter, by anything, any of their relatives. No one could contact them. They could contact me, and if I felt that it was important for them to do something, then I'd tell them, but nothing was important. And you know, none of their families even contacted them. None of them. One guy runs a big corporation over in Switzerland with Simlazan and other beautiful natural type things for the eyes and for the body and stuff like that. A very wealthy, fantastic man. His corporation is just depending on his every word. And 3 months gone. He's a changed man. Brown as a bear. There were times they had to stay up all night, all day, standing on one foot. Why do that? That's stupid. It's to see if you have the confidence to do that. If you say to yourself, no problem, I only stand on one foot, you know, no problem, you know, maybe balance the wall there or something, but no problem. We had 77-year-old ladies, and we had people of various ages, you know. They did perfectly. But the thing is, because they followed directions, every one of them went home without the maladies they came with, without the sicknesses that they had when they came. Everyone went home feeling that they were a super being. Some of them went home lacking considerably in humility.
Well, hello, Randy. I just returned from master school. I am a master now, and so I want you to know how I am a master.
And chicka-wong. Chicka-wong. Everybody says, that's nice. If you're a master, you wouldn't tell me. You would just act like it. Because a master doesn't need any praise. He doesn't need anyone to recognize he's a master. A master just acts like a master, and lives like a master, and expresses like a master. People say, well, Herb, you're a master. And I said, well, thank you for recognizing that. That means you're a master. Because you could not recognize it in me if it were not in you. Yeah, but, you know. And I said, anything you think that I, as a master, could do, you can do. Anything that you think I, because I am a master in your mind, in your eyes, in your thing, you can do it too. You see? And this is true. This is true. This is where you are. This is where I am. Right now, each one of you has some problem that is facing you and giving you a little bit of a tussle. And each one of you is kind of upset about it. You feel, well, some may be very serious. Some may be very, very serious. It may be life-threatening. And so what? Just move on to the next dimension and have another ball there, you know. But why not have a wall here? I contest you, contend you, I require of you, you came here to express your original purity and your original integrity. Now, you don't know what your original purity and your original integrity are. You think you do, but you really don't know. But your original purity and your original integrity are very good, correct? They don't have to be. So, your original purity, well, my body, whichever body is my real body, is whole and perfect. Now, this body here is not the body that I really have. It's just an illusion I have at the moment, because my real body is there, but not showing itself. So, this body, since I'm wearing it, I have perfect feet, legs, arms, head, ears, eyes, nose. And if any area of me is not expressing that perfection, say, for instance, I wear glasses, or I wear a hearing aid, or I wear something else, you know, or I don't wear anything. Maybe my appendix is out, maybe my tonsils are out, maybe, you know, got a pacer in here, maybe got who knows what. It's okay. It's okay. Don't say it's my pacer. I use Randy here all the time because he's such a neat example. I was at the University of UCLA, University of Los Angeles, and working with Thelma Moss. Thelma Moss is a psychiatrist, psychologist, teacher, and so forth. And in the class she was teaching about Carillion photography. And Carillion photography is where they take pictures of the energy fields of your body. And so we went in and had our pictures taken of our hand, basically. It's the easiest thing to do. And a person who was missing a finger, they took a picture, the finger was there. They took a picture of a leaf, part of the leaf was cut off, the leaf that was cut off was there in the energy field. Everything about our body, everything about our being, our mind or body, whatever, is always 100% present. Even if we have the appendix, boom, taken out. Even if you have your teeth, you know, whatever. It's always there. Because it's a moving activity within the body of the changes that are taking place, mutations of various kinds and just simulations and return of teeth and things like that. So, within all of us is this absolute perfection. Within all of us is the energy body, if I may use that term. There are other terms, I'm sure, that are more adequate to it, but it's good for us because we understand that. It's an energy term. There is an energy body where it shows a missing finger, toe, leg, heart, whatever. And it's true. It's true. Now, if that's true, and we want to return to our original purity and integrity, let's use another term. We return to our original purity energy body. Is that something understandable?
Yeah.
We return to our original purity energy body. In other words, where we might have a missing Felix, it's there with the energy picture, with the energy photography. The Krillian photography is a real thing. I have had it done several times, and it works very nicely. Now, how does that help us? It helps us to think of it in another framework. And if we're thinking of it in another framework, we're not saying it's something spiritual, something that God gives to us or takes away from us. God gives life and takes away life. Let me tell you something right now. If any of you have ever said,
in any church you've ever been in,
no, that God gives life and God takes away, from dust to dust. You know the old stories, you know, and God took your son because it was his time to go. Well, your son took himself. Your world took itself. My mother chose to go herself. She was tired, and she said, I've had enough of this. I've worked hard on this, and I didn't quite get the lesson down perfect, but I want to go to my next dimension. I played this game long enough. I want to go to the next one, you know. Maybe I'll look at it a little differently at the next dimension. That's great. Okay, so when they say you die, that God takes away a life or gives life, it's incorrect. Why is it incorrect? Because God is. God doesn't take or give. God is. We claim, we accept, we say, I am whole and perfect, or we say, I am not whole and perfect. Either way, and we are the one. God is, the allness is, everything is. The goodness of the universe exists, the badness of the universe exists. It's all our mental attitude about it. But everything exists and is. And it's up to you to go to the shopping cart and say, I want perfection here, perfect arm, perfect leg, perfect this, perfect that. Can you imagine Randy going into the grocery store and going up to the manager and saying, Manager, I'm hungry. Manager said, come to the right place, boy. And, well, I want some food. Well, you've come to the right place, boy. Well, where do I get some food? Well, just make your selection. I don't know what to choose. I don't know what to eat. Well, just have fun. Have fun. Buy lots of ice cream. Make yourself sick with ice cream, you know. Or buy lots of pizza. You know, just make yourself sick with pizza. Buy all this stuff. And of course, the manager won't say make yourself sick with it. He'll say enjoy it. He'll just thrill you to pieces. And so Randy says, well, he said ice cream first, so I'm going to go and buy 2 or 3 gallons of ice cream. And glub, 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 glub. And he just had the ball. Well, then after a while, Randy says, that store has lots of things in it. I wonder why it has them. Why does it have bread? Why does it have butter? Why does it have jams? Why does it have cheeses? Why does it have spreads? And the millions of other things that it has. Why? And he says, okay, sit down here. at the water fountain, you know, and say, why? And then the divine starts talking to him and says, I'm glad you asked. It's been a long time, you know. Your mother fed you, your family fed you, everybody feeds you, but now you're going to feed yourself. It's been a long time. I'm glad you came, Randy. Okay, and so then your divine self says, now, Randy, you have a nice physical frame. That means you need some substantial things inside of you that will feed you. But, Randy, are you ready for the next step, or do you want to just take this step here? And Randy says, oh, well, what do you mean, two steps? Well, one step is pretending that you need food to maintain your body, and the other is giving yourself spiritual food or ideas or attitudes where you don't need food. Ooh, I don't know anybody who doesn't need food. Everybody I know needs food. Well, perhaps you still need food then. Perhaps you're still in that level of consciousness where food is important to you. And so then you buy food. Then your inner self says, vitamins, minerals, nutrition, protein, carbohydrates, all these things. Get it balanced. Do this here. You don't need that. But anyhow, that's what your body tells you. And so that's what your doctors tell you. That's what your health food stores tell you and everybody else. Okay, but you don't really need it. Okay. If you want to take the second step, which should be the first step, and live from your divine self, you will say, my body is the temple of the living God. Every organ, action, function of my body is perfect. I live in the eternally perfect, ideal spirit, mind, and body. My body is the temple of the living God. My body is the temple of the living God. My body is the temple of the living God. My body is the temple of the living spirit. My body is the temple. It's the temple. It's the temple. It's the temple. It's the temple. Not made by hands. Not made by hands. My body is not furnished by hands with food. My body is not furnished by hands with any substance that necessary to maintain it. Barrett Spaulding in the Life and Teachings of the Master of the Far East talks about the temples not made by hands over there. And they walk into these temples and immediately the temples are illumined and they have all sorts of interesting activities going on there. Joke? Joke?
Must be true.
Sure, it's a joke for us who don't believe it. Because we'll walk in there and say, pow, 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 to walk into things. And other people walk in there, beautiful, they see everything. You think only cats can see in the dark? Cats see a light that is not necessarily there for many people. We can see. I take my walk in the morning, I tell you about that, and I walk these 3 miles around the campus of the university, and it's pitch black outside. Stars, a few, and I come out of the house, I've gone to the bathroom, turn on the light, and it's a, black night, and I walk there, and I know that I'm walking certain pavement and doing certain things. I have my water swim slippers on just so that my feet can feel the path and feel everything and walk comfortably. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and of course, as I always tell everybody, I'm naked. And so I'm walking out there, and the temperature is above 35, 36 degrees. Usually, lately, it's been about 67, 68 degrees, quite nice, almost 70. And so I'm walking along. And as I walk along, the world doesn't change. Not that quick. I'm walking along for maybe 5 minutes. And in 5 minutes, my eyes don't adjust to the night. My eyes begin to see with an inner light. And I can see everything within it. And then I tell myself, whoops, the hill goes down, whoops, the hill goes up, whoops, the hill goes down and up. And I don't have to tell myself that. I tell myself that just to amuse the rest of the gang on campus, but I say to myself, I have perfect sight. And then I look at the stars, bright, beautiful. I look at the ground, shadowed, dark, can see nothing. And so I say, hey, I know this path. I have walked this path for years. I enjoy this path. And so I just merely up and down the path, walking, don't even look down. Because the path is here in my mind. I don't have to look down. I know. You know. Believe in yourself. The Carillion photography tells you that you're an energy body. And that if anything is missing, the energy body still maintains it there. It's still beautifully there. You are fantastic. Now, when I take my walk, I walk for an hour and 10 minutes, the 3 miles, up and down the mountainside, up to the healing throne, and then down around to the various pathways and past the buildings we have and out onto the BLM land and out toward the waterfall, dry waterfall. And then I go out there and I come back and it's wonderful. And I feel great. And I have, at the moment, 3 girls there. I have Ellen, who's 65, maybe something like that. I have Ingeborg, who is 78 years old. And I have Sylvia, who is 50-something young. And Sylvia is a comfortably built woman. And Ingeborg is 78 years old, and she's built like a 78-year-old woman. And Ellen is built comfortably, too, but she thinks she's lighter than she is. But they walk the path, too, every morning. First, they go take a jacuzzi and a swimmix and ride on the bicycles and so forth, and then they walk the path, too, after I'm done walking it. I could have changed it, and I did the other things first, but I had them do it first. And so they walk the path. And meanwhile, it has gotten a smidgen lighter outside, they think. And they just walk along and think it's daylight. And if I changed the path on them a couple times, and they said, hey, I can see real good now, too, not realizing that they're seeing from the inside. They're seeing from their divine self. They're seeing the divine wisdom, the divine light within them. And this is what you can do. This is what you can do, wherever you are. You don't let your eyes get accustomed to the dark or the light. You put your mind in order, and you see with your inner light. You see light. You don't see less darkness or more darkness. You see light. And when you see light, oh, man, do you see beautiful things. So then, as we walk the path, we say, I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect. I say, everyone in my world is whole and perfect. All my family are whole and perfect. All my friends, all the people that I have chosen to pray for and treat for and know for. And these people call me and they tell me, don't ever take me off the list. Because they feel that feeling, that vibration of oneness, of purity, of goodness, of wholeness, of peace. They feel that vibration. And we took one lady off. She'd been with us since 1975. We took her off and her sons, because I got lots of people working on these different projects, and they make changes that I don't always know about. And so then the lady called and she said, why have you taken us off? Didn't know they were off. And she said, put us on and keep us on forever. And we want to be there forever. And I said, okay, that's fine. Now, she doesn't send any money. She doesn't send any letter of appreciation. She doesn't send any letter of what good things are happening to her family. She doesn't send anything like that. Now, is she rich? Yes. Is she whole and perfect? Yes. Does she have the most wonderful family in the world? Yes. Is she a happy, healthy, harmonious, beautiful woman? Yes. Does she owe me anything? No. No. Yes.
Doesn't she owe it to herself to show appreciation?
Hey.
No?
Hey.
Is that wrong?
Hey, you're judging. No. If I ever do anything for anybody for a purpose, you cannot afford to pay me what I'm worth.
I'm worth $30 million for this weekend, kid, you know? $30 million.
And you got it?
My check would bounce.
Your check would bounce. Give it to me, I'll let it bounce. But no, my point is, in the minute we think someone must say thank you or say in any way that something good has happened to them, then we don't believe it is already done. Now, she has so much money that if she gave me 0.01% of her money, I'd be a very rich man. Now, you say, her, how do you know that? Because that's what she is in my consciousness. That's what she is in my country. She's a very rich and a very wonderful woman. I've had a lot of rich and wonderful women and men in my life, and I will continue to have them. But the moment I start thinking something that belongs to them belongs to me, or that they should give me something because they owe it to me, then I cut myself off from my own inner source of total abundance. Nobody made me a rich real estate man. Nobody made me a rich real estate man. I became successful, healthy, wealthy, wise in real estate because I applied myself. I sat down and said, why are those guys sitting at that table where they are sitting at the table of the millionaires, you know, the millionaires here? Why? And I sat down and said, And then the divine in me said, because they're selling millions of dollars worth of property. And if that pleases you, go do it. But I don't know how to sell millions of dollars worth of property. Yes, you do. Just go out and do it. Selling $20,000 house or $1 million house is exactly the same thing. Somebody's going to move in there with their family, with their loved ones, at the level of their own consciousness. So why not associate with millionaires rather than associating with people who are not millionaires? I skipped you. People who are not millionaires, yeah? Right? Why not associate with yourself, who is God, pure abundance? If I waited for that lady to say thank you, she would have made some tremendous strides in her consciousness. I say it to you merely because these illustrations have to be logical in your mind and understood in your mind. But actually, they don't have to be anything. Because I do not heal anybody. I do not help anybody. I would more readily be seen giving somebody a boot in the bottom than to be giving them a pat on the back, you know. Because I am there to suggest to them that they are fantastic, that they are joyous, that they are whole, that they are perfect. And my good comes from here, from the divine in me. My good manifests for me in every area of my life. You say, well, what hurt? What would happen if you died in an air crash tomorrow? So what? So what? Did I enjoy every single moment of my life while I'm living it? You bet. Do I live in the now at all times? You bet. Do I have a happy time living in the now? Yes. Do I expect other people to live in the future or the past? No. My son is the happiest guy because every moment he does exactly what he wants to do. He's working on his computer. He's working on his 3D computer design for his engines and stuff. Things that never existed when he was in high school. Or even 5 years ago, never existed. And today he's got it. He's got the idea and he's got that. He doesn't have to draw 100 drawings of showing all the complexities of it. He just puts it on the computer, bah, it's done. What a magic kid. What a magic kid. Born in 53, what a magic kid. Yeah. How about that? Wonderful. Now what about you? What about you? Are you a magic kid? Are you enjoying every moment of your life? Wherever you go, do you see the same type of person that you are? Or do you see somebody who needs help? If you ever see anybody who needs help, run away. Because it's a reflection of you, and you don't want anything to do with that. If you see a person who is wonderful and joyous and happy and fantastic, say, hi, friend, I love you. And they say, who are you? Well, I'm a guy who thinks you're pretty wonderful. But, I mean, boys don't hug. And you don't know me, I'm a girl, and you know, what do you want after me? They would not think that. You hear me? They would not think that. And you would not think that. I'm saying it because you're in the relative level a little bit yet, and you might think it, but they would not think it. When I give a man a hug, he never thinks that, I wonder what this stupid guy is doing here. Or if I go hug some gorgeous, fabulous, supercalifragilistic girl, you know, she doesn't think, oh my goodness, you know, what is it that he wants from me, you know. What happens when I hug a girl?
She hugs back.
Didn't they? That's exactly what she does, indeed. She hugs me back with all her might and all her arm. And what do people say when I hug them? They say, "My God, you put on a vice grip there." Now, why do I put on a vice grip?
Because you love them.
I love them. Totally. Am I interested in hurting? Why is it some people object to a vice grip? They object to a vice grip because they don't flow. Watch yourself now. You call this the hugging church. Watch yourself. You will see that the degree to which you hug a person is the degree to which the person hugs you. Now watch. I'm going to give her a hug. Now just watch. What kind of hug is she giving me?
Loving.
A loving, gentle, wonderful hug. Now, when I give her a more firm embrace, what does she do?
Same thing.
A more firm embrace. It's just the way it works in there. You're wonderful. Thank you. You see, this is how it works. Whatever you give out, you get back. I gave her a gentle hug. At first she said, "I wonder what he's going to do." I gave her a gentle hug, and then she gave me a gentle hug back. And then I gave her a firmer hug. And as I firmed up on her, she firmed up on me to the same degree. Now, he would do the same thing. He would, all of us, we all do the same thing. When you take a little child in your arms, you don't go, "Let's have a boom like a bust here," you know? You take that child and just snuggle him and say, "You're wonderful. You're wonderful." The little kid back here in church this morning, he was sitting there and he said he had the word "be active" on his shirt. And I tried to figure out what that word meant, and I realized "be active" was to be very active as a child. And so I said, "Can I have a hug?" And he's leaning back on the chair, you know, and saying, and so I grabbed him. And so he just fell back this way and fell back that way, you know, just like a limp bag of wheat. And I snuggled him and hugged him. And he didn't return the hug. He didn't do anything except just lay there and like that. Now, I knew what he was doing. I knew what he was doing. I knew the kind of hugs he got from his mother. His mother loves him. But his mother gives required hugs. His mother doesn't hug him with the idea of saying, "Son, I love you. Snuggle, run away." Mother, "Hug, I love you. I love you. Oh, I love you. I need you. I want you. You're so important as my child. I need you. I want." And the kid says, "I don't need hugs. I don't need that kind of stuff. I don't need to be possessed. I don't need to be owned, you know. No way, no way, no way." That ever happened to you? Sure. No way. But when you go and you give a hug and you say, "I love you," and then be on your way, don't expect them to return it. Don't expect anything. Pretty soon the kids are going to come up to you and say, "Mom, I love you," and on their way. Cielo Arriaga, she's one of our wonderful ministers. Well, anyhow, she's one of our ministers. She came to our church, and she took all the courses. She had rewritten the laws of Puerto Rico when it was coming as a territory of the United States. Very brilliant woman. She was a friend of Terry Cole Whitaker's and a number of other fantastic people in San Diego. And she associated with me for a long time. And then she finished her course and was ready for her ordination. So she borrowed one of the big churches down in San Diego for her ordination. And everybody had to be involved and everything. And it's a warm summer day. It was great. This beautiful church overlooking Freeway 8. And we all came there. She had the city council there. She had the mayor there. She had everybody. I mean, my goodness sakes. And she spoke Spanish excellently and English good. So I did the ordination. And we had a pomp and ceremony. We had the orchestra. We had children's choir. We had everything. Yeah, really fantastic. Well, I went to her home a few weeks later. And as I was coming in the front door, she has two teenage daughters, and they said, "Bye, Mom, see you later. Bye, Mom, see you later." And I'm not a very timid person. And I said, "Girls?" And they said, "Yes, Dr. Barnett." He said, "Come here, please." I said, "Who is this lady?" "That's my mom." And I said, "Does your mom have any disease, sexual disease or something? Or does your mother have any problems, you know?" "No." "Well, have you never kissed your mother? Right on the mouth?" "Ooh, no." And I said, "All right." I said to the older, "Come over here. Ask your mother to stand up. Give her a hug and a kiss right on the mouth. And say, 'Okay, Mom, see you later.'" And she did, because she was so startled, she didn't realize she could object, but she said, "You know," and right on the mouth. And so then the other girl came along, and of course she had time to think on this, and she said, so she kisses her mother right on the mouth and said, "Bye, Mom." And out the door they went like a hurricane, you know. Well, an hour or so later they came back. I was still there. And so then they said, "Hi, Mom." After just a minute. And they came over and hugged their mother and kissed her. And that's the only time I ever did it with them. It changed the life of those girls in a way that you would never imagine. They took a different respect for their mother that they had never had before. She is a single mother. And I don't know where the husband was or whatever, but she's a single mother. And they had a total different respect for their mother. And from that day forward, the mother had a total different, beautiful respect for herself. And she did some very beautiful things. Then she became beautiful. But up until that time, she was willing to let the world give a transitory kiss and take it as a real thing. And I said, "No way." I said, "There's nothing wrong with a mother kissing her children or on the lips, you know, and a father kissing them on the lips and stuff like that. Because kiss on the cheek, you know, that's French stuff, you know, and every time I go over into France and I greet people, and I stop them and I take their kiss them right on the lips." I gave a seminar at the I'm trying to think of the guy's name. He wrote some books in religious science, and he's quite a popular writer. And he had a cult over in Switzerland and Germany. And so as I came to his group to speak to them, he was dead. I had been with him just a week before when he died. Took a picture of him, and his ectoplasm was moving out, and the picture of Jesus in the background, Jesus holding out his hands, receiving it. It's a fantastic picture. And I was sitting there with him and his wife and the maid who took the picture. And unbelievable, but it was a great experience. So I was at Joseph Murphy, you know Joseph.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was the Joseph Murphy group over there. And so I spoke to the group, and I had even more enthusiasm than I am expressing to you today, because they were all brand new, and I had to talk fast, because the interpreter had to interpret what I said, and I had to wait for him to do it and then make sure he said what I said and then go on, because sometimes the interpreter has a mind of their own. And so afterwards, everybody was, you know, happy. And again, we had some 300-400 people in the group there. It was a really nice group. And in Munich. And then I said, "Okay, I will come to the door and give you all a hug." And I went to the door, there's three doors. And I went to the door and I started giving hugs to people. And the men would come up to me like this here, you know, with their arms in front like this here, and the women would put their purse up in front of them, you know. I mean, the Germans, they just weren't used to hugging and kissing, I guess, especially not strange men. But I wasn't strange. I knew myself very well. But anyhow, I began hugging them. And people came through the door. That lovely, you know, smile on their faces, having had a hug that they hadn't had for a long, long, long time. And the children would come through. And the children started a fad. The children would come through and get a hug and a hug, and they wouldn't let me go, and hug, and they'd say, "Lift up, hug," you know. Finally, I'd let them go. Then they'd run in and come in the other door and come through again. You know, they wanted to get more hugs. And so it was kind of fun. Well, the women were not stupid. They left their purses on their seat, came and got a hug and had to go back in again, get the purse and come through the door again, you know. And so it took maybe about an hour and a half for the hugging. Hugging and kissing. I kissed every one of them on the mouth that I could get to. And every one of them, I gave a solid hug. And they never forgot it. They invited me back every year to speak to their group when I was in Switzerland or Germany or in my tour time. And it was great, but it opened it. Then, one of our students works for the government of Germany in Berlin. And everywhere I went, I would go to the hospitals and I would say to the nurses whom I knew and the doctors that I had met, and I would say, how are you? And this is a nurse of the sick. And it's a Krankenhaus. It's a house of the ill, house of the sick, Krankenhaus. And I told him, I said, boy, you guys really like to drum up business here, don't you? What do you mean? Well, you call it the house of the sick, so the people who want to be sick will come here, and you call it the sick sisters that are working on the sick people to do these things. And they said, oh, that's silly. I said, no, it's not silly. So this went on for a number of years. Then our student was meeting with her boss, and they were creating the new cards that they give to people as sick cards, you know, so that you can have your time off and you can have your time punched and you can have your medical and this and that, and so, you know, on your card, on your register. And it's a Kranken card, the card of the sick. And so my student, Karen Hussein, she said, you know, we are psychologically creating a dilemma here for the people, because they think they have to be sick to take their time off. They think they have to be sick to have their dentistry done. They think they have to be sick for sick leave and stuff like that. And we're making them want to stay longer and be sick longer instead of being healthy. Why don't we call it like a Gesundheit card? Because everywhere I went, I said, this is a Gesundheit house, the house of the well, the house of the healthy. Gesundheit, good health to you, you know? The house of the healthy, the house of the healthy. Today, in Germany, the entire government, in Switzerland, the entire government have changed the name of their cards to Gesundheit cards. Oh. Now, I wasn't really working on doing something. I was merely being sort of facetious and yet being very serious about speaking your word in a positive way. But they changed the name. Of course, Karen Hussein, working in the governmental office, didn't hurt at all. But they changed the name. Now, I did it myself, alone, because I changed it. I put this cause in motion. Who cares? I think it's wonderful that they are now talking the Gesundheit card rather than Kranken cards. And I tell you, I did it merely as an illustration. I don't need the credit. You don't need the credit. So when you go around saying to people, you're whole and perfect, and you're limping, you know, I'm whole and perfect, and you're limping, hey, that's okay. Keep saying, I'm whole and perfect. Pretty soon, it won't be there. You all know the story about Charles Fillmore. He's a real idiot. He worked with his wife, Myrtle, developing unity in a very beautiful way. Became a very fantastic instrument for health and wholeness and happiness and understanding for a world at a time when it dearly needed it. Ernest Holmes did his thing, and many other groups did theirs, and the New Thought Group. But Charles Fillmore, his wife died trying to exercise wholeness in her body. She didn't quite make it. But he had one leg shorter or longer than the other. Never did tell me which one was shorter or longer, you know, one leg was different than the other. Which was a short one, which was a long one, no. But he says, I want both of them to be the same length before I die. Well, he was in his late 90s, and he had married again after his wife had died, and it was never the same thing, but the thing is, he was great. I had a chance to meet with him a number of times as a member of the Youth of Unity and other things, and it was a great experience. But before he died, he showed us, young people, he said, you see, when you pray, your prayers are answered. Mine took a while to answer. It didn't have to take that long, but mine took a while to answer because I got busy doing other things. And because I got busy doing other things, I didn't put my concentration on it and put my recognition that my legs are holding perfect, my legs are holding perfect. I got so busy running the organization, doing all these things. He said, but I had time now in my retirement to see both my legs holding perfect. And he said, see, they are both the same. And last night I read a story to most of you from a little magazine that she had on her table from the astronaut Edgar Mitchell. And in the article, it told about this old lady, which many of you heard. And the old lady was, she looked at herself in the mirror and she realized she was very wrinkled and blotched skin. And she was just an ugly looking body. And so she said, I must change this. I haven't been paying attention to my body. I haven't been living in my pure, eternally perfect, ideal spirit, mind, and body. And so she went to the river. And she stood there. And she wiggled like a snake. And let the old body just fall off of her. And just completely go away from her. As her mother and fathers and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins and neighbors and friends from the world do. Because that was before people chose to die. And then she took off this snake skin or skin of a crab or and threw it in the creek and let it float away. And she went home to her child. And she walked in the door and her little daughter looked at her and said, where's my mommy? And she says, I am your mommy. And here stood a glorious, beautiful, youthful girl in her 20s, just absolutely magnificent. Every organ, action, function of her body, magnificent. And her daughter cried and wailed for days. And finally she said, I cannot handle my daughter being unhappy because her mother's not here. She went back and found her skin, which caught on a stick by the river, dried it out and put it back on. And since that time, mankind has chosen to die rather than just to give off the old outer that no longer was representative of who they are. Now, that's a story. That's a fairy tale. But there's more truth to that than we'll ever know. When are you going to be ready to wiggle out of your old attitudes, your old skin, your old image of yourself, and let the purity of your original purity, your original integrity, which is in you, never has left, you've barely covered it up. When are you going to let it shine forth so that you can walk forth illumined, beautiful, dynamic, when you can be the Saint Germain, when you can be the great spiritual beings that we've all heard about, some have been privileged to see, but that we've all heard about, when are you going to be that which you already are? But are you going to play the game that I must keep this old skin and die so they'll recognize it? My associate is a wonderful lady, Ellen Germany, and she was married 27 years or so, and then she was no longer interested in sex, she was no longer interested in a relationship. Her son and daughter were grown, and she just was no longer interested. And her husband was still highly interested in relationships, so he went out and found a girlfriend. And they decided to get divorced, and they got separated and divorced. And he lived on doing his happy thing for him, which was okay. And she went on doing her happy thing for her. Then, not long ago, it was 3 months ago, her husband died. He died in a car accident. His car went into the river or lake or whatever it was, and he drowned. And they hadn't found him for a number of days. And they brought him up, and the son had to identify the father. because they thought that it was him, because it was his car. And it was him, apparently. And he called his mother and said, "Dad's died." And the mother says, "No, he has not. He is not dead. That is not him." She would not accept the fact that it was him. Well, the son had to identify the body of the father, and he was greatly distressed. And he said, "Mom, it is. I saw it. It's his ring. It's his dad. I need to do it." It is not. He did not die. He is not dead. Well, now that was a tremendously traumatic experience for the young man. For the sister, it was easier for her, because she loved her dad and could release him to whatever he chose to do. If he died, he died. If he didn't die, he didn't die. Whatever. He was a perfectly free spirit in her mind. But the boy was very much attached to his father. His father was a banker, and the son became a banker. And they had a lot of mutuality about them. Well, the son couldn't handle the fact that the father died and the mother wouldn't accept it, even though the priest in the liturgy of the funeral sermon said that the mother could not accept that the father had died, which is a perfectly normal thing for a human being to do. They didn't know that she was seeing it from her spiritual point of view. Well, she explained it to her daughter that he didn't die, that he may have left off his skin. He may have just shuffled off that mortal coil that Shakespeare reminds us about. And he lives on yet, on another dimension perhaps, or on this dimension, who knows? You've read books and stories where little children, where people die and they come back as little children who remember that they had a life and that a family belongs to them and so forth. Be that true or be that false, it doesn't matter. But the thing is, we live forever. Well, she explained that to her daughter, and her daughter understood. But her son was still very angry about it. And he called and said he was very angry with her. Very, very angry. And then she said to me, "What do I do?" And I said, "Ellen, first, come to terms with yourself. Do you believe that Alias yet lives? Yes. Do you believe that Alias is a beautiful man? Yes. Do you believe that you are right in whatever you have chosen to believe? Yes." I said, "Okay, now. Now, do you believe that your son has the right to believe what he wants to believe? Yes. Do you believe that you were a little heavy on him by pushing your point of view on him before he understood what you were talking about?" "Yeah, I guess so." "Can you call him and tell him you love him? You haven't changed your belief. You love him, you respect what he believes, and you still believe what you believe, but you love him beyond all measure. Can you do that?" She said, "Yeah." Yeah, very emotional, very heavy thing to do. So, what happened? Her son called her no more than a few minutes later and apologized to her and said, "Mom, I understand. Mom, Dad is not dead." Can you see? It's tough to go before your child with your new radiancy after shuffling off your mortal coil, after releasing this snake skin that is wrinkled and old and useless and perhaps diseased and things like that, just releasing it, returning to your original purity and integrity, being your divine self, and then walking from that with your family who find it difficult to recognize you. That's my mom, my dad, my God, my brother, whoever, you know, like, for goodness sakes, no, you know. They had a mold. They had, "Jesus, where are your holes in your hand and your sides, you know? Excuse me, boy, excuse me, got to go back to the drawing board." Went back to the drawing board and put the holes in and so forth. Came back, "Okay, Doubting Thomas, I'm here." "Yep, you probably are him." He wasn't still real sure. "You probably are him." We cannot prove ourselves. to the world as we live our spiritual lives. We can only prove ourselves to ourselves and be wonderful. We can only walk our own spiritual path and be whole and perfect at all times. We can only look at the world and smell the roses, look at the flowers, realize the black-eyed Susans are great, look at the roses and think how wonderful they are. I gave Ellen my house. It was quite a large house, some 4,000 or 5,000 square feet, including a big four-car garage and everything else, a big old thing. Brand new, swimming pools to make sense and everything else. Lovely offices, lovely everything. And she moved in. I'm remodeling a little building that I want to be in myself. And she moved in. We call it the embassy. When I was there, I just said, lawn grow, trees grow, flowers grow, and let it be. Because I was busy with other things, having fun. But Ellen came in there, and it was at the time of her rebirth, the time of her regeneration from having been a person who believed she was having difficulty with her children and stuff like that, to a person who was reborn in herself. And Ellen walked through the Swimex, where all of our plants were growing in profusion, but not super growth, just balance. I didn't want super growth. I wanted to balance. I didn't want to take care of it. And so, whoosh, new leaves, new flowers, new ferns coming out everywhere. She walked out in the front yard, in front of my office there. And I had a field of roses there, about maybe 30 different kinds. And I had maybe a two different kinds, a dozen iris that my brother had given me and planted there, and all sorts of other trees that we'd taken willows and just jammed them down into the earth, and they're growing like trees now. They are trees. They're beautiful. And the lawn, which hadn't been mowed for a couple weeks, she had it mowed. Beautiful. The roses are growing more profusely. All of the other flowers with their many names are growing abundantly. And then we had a seminar in Locarno, I told you about, master seminar, and a little man came to that seminar, and his name was Hans Peter Gerd, I think, something like that. And humble man, very humble. He was a gardener, and he came to our seminar, and he was always humbly sitting back and humbly sitting. And we asked him what he did, and so it, and he says he worked for rich ladies, taking care of their gardens and their houses, and they all wanted to give him their gardens, their houses, but he didn't want that. He just wanted to take care of them, you know. And so now, when Ellen is in the midst of her regeneration, rejuvenation, her rebirth, with her garden growing, Hans Peter has come forth out of the woodwork, so to speak. We haven't heard from him now for number of months, and poof, up comes a beautiful card with a lovely garden on the front of it, saying how much he loves us and how much he remembers us. And so what did Ellen do? Ellen said, Hans Peter, we're having our Christmas seminar. Would you like to come to the Christmas seminar? And while you're here, spend a couple weeks and take care of our garden and make it all beautiful, make it all lovely. And who knows what's going to happen? But can you see, planting seeds does wonderful things. When we are able to grow, Ellen did not deny the fact that she believes her husband still lives, and he does. Her family has a new understanding of her because she does not bow down to make them feel better to agree with them. She agrees with the principle that she understands and lives. You agree with the principle you understand and live, and you prepare yourself now. It was not by accident that we read that story about the snake, that is about the skin that the woman discarded. That was not by accident. And it's not by accident that I've mentioned it now twice. It's not by accident that there's something very real about them, that Shakespeare had quoted that very same thing. And that we are told by the Bible many times, let the past be gone. Jesus said to us, He said, "Let the dead bury the dead. You are with the living." Are we ready to let the dead bury the dead? Are we ready to live eternally? Are we ready to have a new Jerusalem in our body? Are we ready to have a new beingness in us? Are we ready to be the most dynamic, forceful, fantastic being that ever walked the face of the earth from our point of view? And the answer is yes. And the time is now. The time is now for you, each one, to enjoy a perfect body. No pain. To enjoy a perfect physical body, formed according to your ideal of your perfect physical body. To have perfect eyes, perfect ears, perfect nose, perfect taste, perfect touch, perfect allness. Yeah, perfect hair. Yeah, perfect hair. Why not? I told you in the seminar, when you have a spiritual healing, you will not remember that you were ever sick, nor will any doctor ever remember that you were ever sick. They will only remember you in what you are right now. So when you have this rebirth, which is ready to be taking place in you, even as I speak, you will not remember that you had an old body, or that you had a crippled attitude or mind or body. You will not remember that you were limited in any way. You will be that pure, you return to your original purity and integrity, you'll be that pure beingness that you are, now and forevermore. Now this sounds like the conclusion of our talk. Is there any questions? I get waxed eloquent, if you will, and I get wound up in topics and in themes and in directions, and I have lots of fun. But I think that's what life's all about. Right? I bet you went to get me a cup of water, didn't you?
I will certainly do.
That was fantastic, isn't he? And he's got his finger in front of the lens. Isn't he fantastic?
So whatever seems to be a problem with us, we can know it will be changed by the way
we think.
No.
Whatever we think may be a problem in us, as we accept our reality, the problem which may have been there is no longer there, and we won't even remember that it was there. Thank you.
And where do we get? How do we get to that point? Just by the way we're thinking?
We get to that point. By one thing, by being reborn. They said, "Being reborn? Oh my God, you know, we've got to go and join the Baptists, we've got to go join these Anabaptists and so on." No, no. To be reborn means what happens when you're born. Now, let me just give her a rebirth right now. So I come up to her, I take a snake jar, bang! You know, and she, I said, "What's your name?" "Oh, I don't know." "Oh, what? Where you been?" "I don't know." "You're a lady. You know, you're at least 25 years old, Zora, and you know, you're dressed well. You're a beautiful person. Who are you? What's your background? What's your..." She doesn't know. She has amnesia. Now you accept that, don't you? You accept the fact that some people have amnesia, right? Mm-hmm. Do some people have amnesia?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You know, we don't have to say for certain people. They don't remember who they are. They're born new. If they had me or somebody else take them at that moment and say to them, "You're divine, you're perfect, you're wonderful, you're magnificent, everything about you is wonderful, your body is whole and perfect, you're fantastic, you're fantastic, you're fantastic, you're fantastic, you're fantastic, you're fantastic," and have them believe it and have them live it and have them walk through the street fantastic like this, you know, and glorious. And people would say, "Wow, who's that wonderful person? My goodness, who are they? They must really be some person very special. They walk around just like they own the place, you know, and it's wonderful." But you don't remember that you ever were that person that you still are, but you think you're not. But you don't have to be the person that you were, because you put a new cause in motion, because I had a chance to get to you, or one of the rest of us had a chance to get to you and say, "You're God, you're God, you're God, you're wonderful, You're fantastic. You're holy perfect. You're glorious. You're supercalifragilisticexpialidocious! You know? And you say, what is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Just, it's good. That's all I got to know. It's just good, you know. And this is a neat thing. This is a neat thing. Born again does not have to be this, Christian type of activity that we think about, but it has a similarity, and it certainly comes out of a good background. But what we want to do is to forget the past. When was the last time you were sick?
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Super!
Everybody's done.
When's the first time you got married? I don't remember.
I am married to the most glorious person in the world. She happened to die 10 years ago, but I'm married to the most glorious person in the world. You follow me? Live in the now. Live in the present. And then that rebirth, then that new self of yourself. I'd rather that you didn't use the word rebirth, because rebirth is sort of a word that has many things attached to it, just like the word God has many things attached to it. Now we're going to do a rebirth. Now remember when you were a listener, you were a little boy, and you were a little girl, and you were a little, wasn't like that. You were this, and you were that, and you were the other thing. Now, so she goes back into her mind, and she remembers things, but she does not. She remembers her universal oneness. She is anything. She could be the king of Siam. She could be anything. She could be Cleopatra. She could be nothing. She could be everything. But she is not limited to this physical form, because this physical form in its previous incarnation, if we will say incarnation, which I don't like to use, but in its previous what?
Life.
And its previous dimension. This mind has lived forever. And this mind has lived on dimensions, beyond dimensions, beyond dimensions, forever and ever and ever. And it is living on them now. She is not going to live on something or not having lived on something. She's living in everything right now. So if we take her back, as we take these bodies of going back into our previous lifetimes and stuff, that's merely playing a game. Now, the last checker game that we played together, you lost. And then I won the one before that, and then I won the one before that, and then you lost the one before that. Well, it sounds like I lost all of them. Yes, that's right. But I didn't want to say it that way. But, you see, it's all a matter of how we say things, all a matter of how we put things into words. And he is so sharp. He was on top of the very fact that I said he was a loser all the way. And what do you say to me? You say, I'm a winner, don't you?
I am a winner.
Now, I want you to say it as though you really mean it.
I am a winner.
I believe you. Oh, boy. Feel that hand. That power. I am a winner. Are you willing not to say it, but to go around through the world as a winner? When you get in your car, do you expect it to start? When you
yes.
open your, you betcha. When you open your front door of your house, do you expect the first time you stick the key in, it's going to turn and open up first grade? Right. I had a screen door on one of the cottages, and it never worked. Bam, bam. You had to go do like that too. And so I took some WD-40, and it opened just like a charm. About a year or two later, bam, bam, more WD-40. It's very dusty, and the dust gathered onto the WD-40 and made the screen door handle hard. It worked like a charm if you had the proper lubricant on it, and it opened every time perfectly. It opened every time perfectly. Now, I'm going to take some WD-40 and squirt it on I Am a Winner, and he's going to say, I'm a winner, all the time. He's going to say he's a winner. He's going to be a winner, but because he puts the cause in motion every time. Now, you see how that works? Now, I hope you have plenty of WD-40.
I might suggest you try LPS number 2.
LPS number 2.
Superior to.
Well, hey, it's the principle I'm talking about.
Of course.
That's the principle. What's the name of that? What's the name of that?
LPS number 2.
LPS number 2. Who manufactures that?
LPS. Don't say LPS, just say LPS.
LPS.
I should know who manufactured it, I should know what this is. You do know, and you said it. You said LPS, and LPS is the one who manufactured it.
They also make number one and number three.
And this man is so brilliant. My friend, he should run for God. Oh, you are, aren't you? You are. And that's wonderful. But this is what it's all about, believe in yourself. Believe in the things about yourself, believe in the things you say, believe in your LPS, you know. Whether it's number one or two or three. And who knows, and maybe even have a four. We're sticky doors. But no, this is great. This is great. But again, we have lifetimes within lifetimes within lifetimes, which are really dimensions within dimensions within dimensions. If we call them lifetimes, we think it's a lifetime and a lifetime and a lifetime. But dimensions within dimensions within dimensions are all at once, all at the same time. Because there is no time and there is no space. Science is proving that which we have known forever. There is no time and no space, only the now. Only this instant. Only this instant. And you are here, and I am here, and I am delighted to be with you. Any further questions or thoughts? You asked a question. Anybody else got a question? I don't want to shut you off. We've got another 8 hours or 10 hours. When's my plane leave in the morning? Wonderful.
What about...
Yes.
I mean, we already know that doctors will say, this can't be healed, and then we say it is healed, because we're thinking right?
Well, what is your question?
Well, I have what they... I don't...
No, no.
Say I have it.
You know okay. Somebody who has a problem.
Yeah, I have someone that has a problem.
Yeah.
I know someone that has a problem. All right, they say that it can't be healed.
That's
how
fine.
Do I,
how do you handle that? Okay, here's how you handle it. Here's how you handle it. You go to another doctor, and they say it can't be healed. You go to another doctor, and they say it can't be healed. You go to another doctor, they say it can't be healed. You go to another doctor, and pretty soon you run out of doctors in Farmington. So then you go over to Durango, or to Aztec, or you go over to Santa Fe, or you go over down to Albuquerque, and you want to stay in New Mexico if possible, because you know that's where your ability to have these things done without cost is done. And so you're down in Albuquerque, and you go to the doctor there, and the doctor says, what? There's nothing wrong with you. Woman, come with me. And he takes you over to the park. And in the park, they have these big gas balloons. And he says, I'm taking you for a ride with me in this gas balloon. And you go up with him in that gas balloon. And he says, you're whole and perfect. And you say, no, but I've got this thing that can't be healed. And he says, you say that once more to me, I'm going to shove you over the edge of the balloon. And you're whole and perfect? You're whole and perfect. Now say it.
I'm whole and perfect.
You're whole and perfect. You're whole and perfect. Otherwise, over the edge.
Oh.
I mean, we could delay it, your death, or we could do it now. You know, whichever you want. So, if you're whole and perfect. So, you say, I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. He says, okay, fine. He says, now.
I'm whole and perfect.
No. He says, now. And then you open your eyes, and you are at your first doctor, who says to you, that's right. You're whole and perfect.
You got the right doctor?
No.
Right.
This is the right doctor.
Okay, right here.
This is the right doctor. Now, I would not tell you not to go to a doctor to be checked. I would never tell you that. I would tell you this is where the healer dwells. Mm-hmm. When you take time, instead of eating all the meals that you're eating, and going to all the games and frolic times that you're going to, I don't mean the jolly times, but the frolic times, and instead of going to all of these neighbors and talking about things, because you know you are a very friendly, outgoing lady, and take your time now, if I could suggest this to you, and if you think you have the guts to do it, take the next 24 hours, absolute, when you leave here, and go home or go out and rent a motel room or something. You want to be totally by yourself. And say to yourself, I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect.
Just go on and go on and go on and go on and home first. You are planting in your consciousness this new attitude. And your old attitude's going to say, but you're not, you're hurting, you're this, you're that. I'm home first. And your body says, bup, 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 I'm home first. But the doctor says, I'm home first. And then, after 24 hours, then you'll begin to start seeing the light. And you'll start beginning to recognize that you are home first. And that there is nothing to heal. And if you wish, you can go to your doctor. And you, or go to a different doctor, and go to the doctor and say, doctor, I'd like a checkup. And so the doctor says, all right, is there anything you want to be checked up particularly for? No, just a general checkup. Because what I had was supposed to be rather obvious. And so he checks you up and he says, my God, for a lady of 25, you look like you're 18. What's going on here? What is that song about? And he says, thank you very much. And glad to come. Nope, you're home perfect. Yep, that's what I thought. But believe in yourself. What did Jesus say? Our mentor just came back here. Jesus said, physician,
heal
thyself. And he didn't say, you physician, heal her or yourself. He said, you, to each of us, to all of humanity, heal thyself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I say to you, now I'm not kidding you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm not kidding you. You do that, you may think that, what a joke, you know. If you do that, with all sincerity, if you can go home and have privacy and not answer the phone and not do anything and not have people come running over and saying, she doesn't answer the phone, why is she? But she's dead, what happened? You know, just go wherever you can be by yourself and do your thing and say you're whole and perfect. And bring this into your system. I told you I did it with my sin, remember? And it's just a matter of saying, I'm home perfect. Because the x-rays would have said, boing! And then the second x-ray would have had to demonstrate it because I would have believed it, it would have believed it, we would have believed it, and it would have had it. Where do you think things come from? Our belief, our thought. It comes from our mental attitude about ourselves. We have to get ourselves in order. Get ourselves liking ourselves. Get ourselves having a good time. There's no reason why not.
Would it be possible now, I mean, if you really, really brought enough into that you could do it in a half a day?
You could do it in a... Uh-huh. If you stop playing games. But she wants to tell the story. Remember the story in the book, how's it go? I love to tell the story of Jesus and his love, of Jesus and his love, of Jesus and his love, of Jesus and the sorrow, the sorrow. See him? He's coming out now. He's coming out. But you see, we sing these God-forbidden songs and we call them joyous. The Messiah, the death of Jesus on the cross, and his birth and resurrection, his this and that. We love that. We love it. And we love the blood and guts. With the spear in the side and all the body fluids flowing out. Yes, and with the hands, with the bloody hands. And with the wreath on his head, with the blood trickling down his face and his eyes. And then the loving person coming along with a sponge of water. But it wasn't water, it was
vinegar,
and giving it to the Christ. How we hate ourselves. What a shame. What a shame that we do things like that to ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is say, I like me, I like me, I like me. What we want to do is know that it's done unto us according to our belief. But let our belief be good. Let our belief be wonderful and gentle and kind and beneficial to us. And let us remember that we can be perfect as is the Father within us. We can be perfect as God we are within. We can. but we don't know what it is, and so there we don't try. So don't worry about what it is. You have a beautiful rosewood table, and you polished that table because someone gave it to you and it was dusty and dirty and it was, you know, left to sort of be ignored. And you said, but there's beauty there. And you polished it. And you worked at it a little here and a little there. And every day when you came home from work, or every day when you came in the house, you'd look at the table and you'd polish a little bit, maybe another few inches. And after a year, the table sort of finished itself. It was glory. And people came into your house and said, my God, where did you get that beautiful table? And you say, it was there all the time, underneath the dust and dirt and grime. It was there all the time, waiting for me to give it and return it to its prime. And it didn't even cost me a dime. See, isn't it fun? I can do things like this in English, but if I try to do things like this in German or French or Italian, which I have to go and speak in, it doesn't cut really. And the amusement is always there. But you see what I'm saying? It was there all the time. And your friends never recognized it because it was in the corner and it was sort of ignored. But you also ignored it. But you gave it a little love here and a little love there. Now, if she decided that now is the time for that table to shine, she would go home and sit down in front of that table and take her cloth, maybe her buffing gadgets, you know, like for polishing the car or something, and buff it and buff it and buff it, and people would come over, why are you so diligent working on that till 2 o'clock in the morning, my goodness sake? She says, my name is Michelangelo. I'm creating David. I'm bringing out of the marble that which no one has seen. I'm bringing forth the beauty that lay hidden there. Now, sir, I have told my friends for years, right here, we each have a diamond. And that diamond is perfect. It's faceted, it's beautiful. But over the years, we have clouded it over with thoughts and ideas that said we were limited. Now, we can take one sheath and pull it away and throw it away, shred or shock. Or we can take it away little by little. If you can handle it, if you can say, I'm whole perfect, and with a, you know, like you had a bandage on it and you go, you know, for a second, and then it's done. Or pulling it, all goes over here. And it's a matter of how you want to do it. You want to take 24 hours? Or you want to take it and be done? Can you stand the shock of realizing that you're God? Or do you need to see it little by little? Do you need to walk naked into the mountains and have your inner vision slowly reveal to you all that is in the darkness out there, all that is in the blackness? Had a farmer in Switzerland, and I went to his farm, and he said to me, Herb, I got to go out and feed the cows. I said, how can you feed the cows? It's a whiteout. You cannot see 2 feet in front of your face. It is so white, so brilliant. The snow is just magnificent. It's so white. It's a blizzard. You cannot see. And he says, well, I have a rope going from here to the barn. And so we walked along the rope to the barn. And lo and behold, there was a barn there. And there were cows in the barn. There were chickens. There were ducks and pigs and other things in the barn. And it was warm in the barn. The bodies of all these animals, with no insulation, just a clapboard, kept them nice and warm. And he fed the cows. He fed the chickens. And he went back. And that thin, frail rope that led from the house to the barn. But he could walk that thin, frail rope all he wants. If he did not believe the barn was going to be there when he got there, he would be frightened. And he would walk carefully, you know, making sure that there was footing before him before he got there, because he didn't believe that the barn was there. And this is how we are. We don't believe that the barn is there. And we walk so carefully. We take a long time. But in an instant, because it's done. You already are whole and perfect. You just haven't accepted it. We have. Everybody here in this room is whole and perfect. Everybody here in this room is a spiritual master. Everybody here in this room is spiritually healed of any experience that has ever troubled them at any time. Now that's how I see it. And I say to my gang on campus, I say, be careful. You come to me with your problems and your world. I see right through you. Ha, ha, ha. I see right through you to the divine in you. I see the good in you. I see the pure in you. I see the magnificent in you. I see you're so fantastic. You're so magnificent. You can't fool me by telling me you got a problem. Ha, ha, ha. And they say, but I do. And I say, no, you don't. But I do. I say, if you do, prove it somehow. I can't see it. But Herb, you're not being realistic. No, you're not being realistic. You think the broken leg is real. You think the stubbed toe is real. You think the stomach ache or headache or whatever things you might call it, you think they're real. They're transient. They're there for a moment and click, they're gone the next moment. Yeah, we take her. She likes to be taken here. Like, and we say to her, okay, love, your foot hurts. And she's got her foot in a bucket of water and ice cubes and stuff to make it feel better. And I say, oh, there's mail here for you. Yes, you've won the sweepstakes. You got $30 million, you know? Wow! She jumps out of that bucket forgetting all about that foot thing. And she says, I got $30 million. What am I going to do with this? Fantastic! And her husband says, kindly, not unkindly, sweetheart, be careful of your foot. Oh, I got to sit down. But you know what I mean? Never remind them. Never remind them of what they had released so beautifully for whatever reason. You know what I mean? Let it go.
Don't ask them how they put it.
And don't ask them how it feels. And don't ask them as well. I'm your practitioner. You come to me, you want to be healed or something? I say, you're home perfect. And then I don't go back. Well, my friend, good to see you again. How are you feeling? You had a problem last time. So how are you doing? Did you get over that? Yeah. A practitioner never asks if the healing has taken place, because the practitioner knows it took place in the practitioner's consciousness, and then it took place in the individual's consciousness. First, in the practitioner's consciousness. First, you have to clear the air. First, you have to know the barn is there. And then you walk confidently along that corridor. And if you don't know the barn is there, if you don't know the healing is there, if you don't know that it is done, then you walk very carefully.
I once had a dream long, many, many years ago. There was a woman who had a club foot, and I had a dream about her, and that I was in the act of healing her foot. Mm-hmm. And then as I walked away, there was another part in me that had to look back to see.
Check.
See that really took place.
I wonder what biblical story that might refer to. Jack? He's leaving. Oh, so we got to do it on our own. What biblical story might that refer to? Called S and G?
Yes,
yeah. Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay.
Yeah. Where the wife had to look back and had to check.
Huh? Yeah. She turned into a pillar of salt.
And she turned into a pillar of salt. That this is what happens to us.
Mm-hmm.
When we do not live in the present and believe in the present and let the past be past. And Jesus said to the men that were healed, the sight was brought back, go tell nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out and they say, before I couldn't see and now I can see, hurrah, hooray, goody for me, you know. And their sight was lost.
Mm.
And he said, wash your eyes in the mud of the river there and rinse it off. And come to me, you're healed. Always, he said, go and tell no one. Because it's for you and for you alone. So keep that in mind. And you're right. You look back in your dream, and it's not complete. And she's not going to look back in her dreams. But you don't have to wait 24 hours. None. But all of us, if we can't shut up, and we have to tell all of the unhappy things of our life. Now, I had a child, and the child was born. It was an easy birth. It just popped right out, and this and that. That's not a bad thing, is it? Mm-hmm. No. I had a child. Oh, so painful. Oh, my God. My husband had to massage me, and so forth. And the doctor took 6 hours to bring it out, and then, oh, dear. Now, is that what, something you want to remember?
Don't remember.
But you can remember the good stuff. You can remember the things that you were the master of. As we were talking the other day about putting a gun to somebody's head, you can remember it when you have no fear. If you have fear, let it alone. If you had no fear, if you just said, hey, you can shoot me if you want to. Don't you remember Bambi? Bambi was just a little bit of a fawn, and the other animals were teaching Bambi what Bambi was seeing, and then they were Thumper was saying to Bambi that this is a flower, and then as Bambi reached down to smell the flower, the little skunk was under the flower and lifted up his head and said, you can call me flower if you want to. Remember? But another thing that Bambi's mother said, as Bambi was saying, look, you can't get up. Thumper, yes, mother, Thumper, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And how true that is for all of us, huh? If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Wonderful, huh? Anybody else got any scintillating comment, question, thought, imagination? Yeah? Yeah. You're loaded.
My stitch in my side is whole and gone.
You're loaded. Uh-huh. You're loaded with perfection and wholeness and right action and peace. You're loaded with forgot.
Uh-huh.
Forgot all about it. And don't you tell anybody else ever again about any condition in you that you don't think you'd like to tell them about.
Oh, may I show you my operation? I had my appendix out, and you know, they did this here. But hey, look, I had a heart surgery, and they did this big cross on me. Aren't I wonderful? See, I got the cross of Jesus on my chest here, and I'm just fantastic, you know. Oh, my goodness sakes, you know. You've got to let that go. You know what I mean? It's so normal to say my stitches. It's so normal to say my appendix. It's so normal to say my broken leg. And it's so normal for Jesus to be facetious. What did we have Jesus saying about the guy's broken leg? Oh, you want another one? What wouldst thou of me? What do you want from me? I am the Christ. I am the living God. I can only see everything as good and very good. So, what do you want to call it? You want more stitches? Get some on the other side too. Well, up the middle, down the back. I tell you, we know how to make stitches, don't we? No. When you go home, look in the mirror tonight, you're going to see that if not totally gone, they're going to be dissolved. You watch. You go home expecting that, and that's what you experience. So I know you're going to run into the bathroom right now and put your shirt and look at it right now. Are you ready now? All right, well, it's up to you. Can you believe? Can we believe the statements we put in motion by ourselves? I went to my mother's house many times in the Vijay world, and I went to visit her because she had this and that and the other little thing going on with her. And I said, Mom, you don't have that problem. I said, you don't have that problem at all. She said, oh, yes, I do. I said, all right, Mom, come with me. So we went to a reflexologist. And
I had massaged mother's feet and given her the reflexology that I knew, which was nothing, you know. And so I took her up to a reflexologist, a person who checks your feet. And he checked her feet and he says, "Whoa, you've got something here. And he told her, "You have water on your lungs, or you have fluid on your lungs, or something in about your lungs." And she thought it was her something else, you know, liver or whatever it was. In fact, it was a liver, yeah. And so she went to the doctor and had herself checked. Sure enough, she had fluid on her lungs. It was nothing to do with her liver. But they had misdiagnosed her. And they had misdiagnosed her to tell her that she was dying. And that she was, you know, almost kaput. And she believed it. And she knew better. She was a unity minister. She knew better, you know. She's my mama. She knew better, you know. And so I told her. And so that was taken care of. But the old haunt of the liver problem was so strong that she let it remanifest. Not remanifest. She let it manifest there where it had even been. She wanted it there and she was going to have it there, you know. And she had it there. And then she died of that. Stupid. It's her choice. I love her. I said, "Don't die." She said, "I want to go." I said, "Well, you can go if you want to." But you see, we do that to ourselves. Now, mother had lost the will to live because an incident happened to her that changed her whole life. She went down for her driver's license and they wouldn't renew it. She had no reason to live anymore. Her wheels were taken away from her. Remember how children, when they first get their wheels, they're free, they're free, they're out on their own, the world is their oyster. Well, mother's oyster was taken away from her. And in leisure world, there were cabs, she had plenty of money, there were neighbors who would drive her. We lived near enough by, all she had to do was call, in 5 minutes we were at her house and take her wherever she wanted to go. But she lost control of being the boss. And she says, "I'm done. That's it." So, I have another man. His name is Bill Ellsworth. He's a spiritualist minister. His wife and I started our churches at the same time up the mountain. And I had the life of teaching the master's Far East class, and I advertised, and she was the only person that came. And after we started the class, she told me, we were into the class about 5 lessons. She says, "I've been teaching this now for 10 years. Well, thank you very much for coming to my class and letting me teach you. But she's a wonderful lady. Well, her husband, she is a great lady. And then all of a sudden, she decided she was going to kick off. She was 85. And she just sort of lost interest. Her congregation flocked around her and loved her. Her spiritualist group just thought she was the greatest lady. She could read plates like nobody else on this earth. You know, you serve a dinner and then read the plates and you tell what your fortune is and stuff. And so her husband, Bill, is a super guy. He's 88. And he would come up to the prayer table, you know, to the stool. And at 88, he'd just go, you know, just like a young kid. And he still does it. He still does it. Well, his son-in-law, saw that he was having trouble driving, so he reported him to the insurance company that he was a bad risk. And they took away his license. He still had years to go on his license. And he still drove very well. And so then he decided, "All right, I'm going to confirm that my license was taken away with reason." So he, you can give me the word for this, I don't remember the word. He got this stuff where your eyes change, you know, where you don't see too well. Not glaucoma.
Macular degeneration.
That's the silly thing. It's a new one. I mean, you got to have new ones coming up all the time. But that was it. And I said, "Well, Bill, what are you going to do?" Well, first, here was the story with Bill. I went to Bill, and I said, Bill, Carol's dead now, and you're here. And I said, you have always wanted a brand new pickup truck. I said, buy it. I said, your church is wealthy. You got hundreds of thousands of dollars and never spend anything. I said, you let me spend stuff on you, but you won't spend stuff on yourself. And so I said, go and get that pickup truck that you always wanted. Oh, no, I'm not worthy of it. Oh, no, I shouldn't. I want a blue. Well, his children, who were going to inherit the church, didn't want him spending money that they would be inheriting shortly because he was 86 or 7 or 8 years old, whatever he was. And so they told him he shouldn't do that, you know, that wasn't right, that's not legal. I said, Phil, the church needs a truck. You're up in the mountains there. You've got to have a truck that thinks back to the house and to here and to there. And I said, it doesn't matter whether it's a truck that's 100 feet long or a truck that's whatever, you know. I said, you need it. And he says, well, Herb, you know, you're right, but, you know. So he let himself get talked out of the truck. He had two other cars, and he had another truck. But he wanted this new truck because that was an image, a symbol to him. And he didn't buy it. He didn't buy it. And so then came that word. And he can still drive perfectly well. During the day, he can see perfectly well. He can see the traffic. And he's driving without a license. He's driving. He's only being unhappy because he's not legal, because he's always been, in his entire lifetime, he's never had an accident. Never. I mean, my God, what better than me? He never had an accident. He never had a ticket. He never had anything against the law, against him in any way. Marvelous man. Just love him to pieces. But his family, who were more interested in the money than they were in him, talked him out of the thing that would give him continued life, continued motive, reason for living. He had the other trucks, but that's no big deal. He could drive anything, you know. And what do you got? What have you?
A new truck.
What have you done to yourself that you've denied yourself that right now is the time to have it? He said, I might die next week. I might die. I said, great, then you've used the truck for a week. Then you've used it for a year. And what the heck, whoever gets whatever, the truck will go along with the church. That's great, you know. You got it in the church's name. Everything's in the church's name. Everything is tax exempt. I helped him build a beautiful little geodesic church up there in the mountain. And his wife was, well, she was littered with all sorts of ideas. And that's 20 years ago. And we built this geodesic dome, and I gave them a beautiful organ that we had and other things. And they just had a great place. We would go over there every Christmas and celebrate with them in their special celebrations. But it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And then they had a mobile home, which was just around the corner up in the mountain, you know, in the wilderness away from everything. And then he had a job. He had a full-time job as caretaker of an estate right next to his front gate. And the estate was three great lakes and forests and other buildings and stuff that weren't being used for anything. He was just caretaker of it. And he was paid a good salary. And he still is paid a good salary for it. And he walks over there now and does things. But you see, that will to live, we'll see whether Bill decides to live. His health is perfect. His body is perfect. Everything about him is perfect. His mind is sharp and crisp. He knows all about the rules of the law. I come over and I read him the stuff from his state reports and stuff like that, and fill him out with him and do things like that. But we all need a will to live. And the will could be to be our perfect self. The will is not to run an organization. It's not to go out and save the world. Jesus did not come to save the world. He came to do what? Who can tell me?
Teach us, Paul.
I'm sorry?
To teach us.
He came to be the W
something. The
way shower.
Right.
The way shower. He didn't say, you got to follow me. He didn't say, I am the way, the truth, and the light. Yeah. He didn't say that. But you see, what he said was, I'm the way, the truth, and the light. Anyone who follows me will have eternal life. And he didn't say, you better follow me or else you won't have it. He didn't say that. He just said, this is what I am. You follow me, you got it. And this is what our teachers say to us today. They say, here is the path. If you want to follow it, enjoy it. If you don't want to follow it, that's your privilege. You don't have to. They say, here is the way to spiritual wholeness. Now, you talk to the princess here, and what's she going to say to you? She's going to say to you, with proper nutrition, proper, what's the word? Massage, and a loving husband, you will live forever in paradise. Isn't that what she says? Now, has she got the whole thing put together pretty good?
She does live it.
And she does live it. Hey, listen, that's her audience talking. She does live it. But, you see, she's not really trying to teach this to anybody else. What she's doing is she's teaching it to herself. And she's gathering around her those people who think like she does and who want to walk the same path that she does. And her husband is the first one. And he's not her follower, nor is she his follower. They are merely walking according to their inner light. And they're listening to that inner light. And he has so many fantastic ideas that she hasn't even listened to them yet. And she has so many fantastic ideas that she hasn't even brought them to light yet. You watch. If you think that she's been a miracle lady these last, how many years has she been playing this game? 10 years? That's nothing. I mean, she was 68 at the time, 10 years ago, and now she's 25. And if she's 25 now, what's going to happen in another 10 years?
About 18.
18, yeah. And watch it. I mean, just watch her dust. Right? Right? You know? Okay, any other comments? I mean, I love talking, as you can tell.
I'd like to share an experience I had when I was 6 years old. Some of you may have heard this before. I was experiencing a chronic bronchitis. And, of course, this is before any of your antibiotics and so forth. And I had to drop out of school, and I just gradually was getting worse. And one day I was sitting in my little rocking chair, and a woman came to the door. It was summertime, it was the screen door, and she knocked. And my mother went to the door, and she said, may I have a drink of water? And the mother says, yes, come in. Well, I was sitting in the chair and coughing and so forth, and she came over to me with her hand out like this, and said, would you like to be free of that? And without any of the yes buts that come in later on, was yes, yes, no questioning, just yes. She took my hand, stood up, put her hand on my head, and said, do you know the Lord's Prayer? I said, yes. She said, say it with me. And at the end of this prayer, I had this coughing spasm and all this junk came up and was gone. I was free of it.
Now, why do you think that happened to you? Why do you think that you got a gift like that when thousands of other people would have liked to have had a gift like that and haven't got a gift like that?
Well,
I don't want to hear a lot of answers. Okay. The reason is because you said yes.
Yeah.
Unequivocally. You said yes without reservation. Mm-hmm. You said yes with your innocence in your heart. You said yes to this interesting lady. She wasn't beautiful or not beautiful. She was just a lady. Mm-hmm. And you said yes. Mm-hmm. And quite likely, she wasn't even there.
Ah.
She was your creation of wholeness, mm-hmm, acting through you. She was perhaps your angel walking across the bridge with you, mm-hmm, in your consciousness. You see, we all have these angels within us. We all have these attitudes of consciousness within us. And when we can say yes unequivocally to them, the healing is instantaneous. When we can say yes to them unequivocally, are you ready to say yes? Don't answer me.
Okay.
I'm not the one that's...
No, but I'm just...
But you are. You are, it's okay. You are the one that says yes to you. You are the one. Now, I gave all of you a gift yesterday who were present at the seminar. And I'm not going to ask you how many of you did it, because I know how many did it. But all of you who followed my instructions for the gift would have experienced total healing in your body from every experience that ever might be called negative. But you didn't do it. You didn't do it with all your heart. You laughed if you did anything at all. But you didn't do it. I told you, take your hand and do an energy massage of your entire body, including your genitals, including your feet, arms, legs, eyes, everything. And both sides, in the front and the back. Just not touching yourself, just an energy massage where you take your hand and run it over the edge of your skin and over your total being. And then say, I like you, I like you, I like you, I like you, I like you. Do this over your total self. And I told you, it was a very special gift. And I know how many of you did it. And obviously the rest didn't. If you did it a little bit, that's nice. But if you did it totally, that's the result. He said unequivocally yes to his healing. And it was done. He played the game and had to go through releasing the negative images. But it was done before that release even took place. That was just something that embellished it into his consciousness and his mind and said, wow, that's great, you know, that's great. Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Sigke went into the Vatican, into the archives down below the library buildings where no one was allowed to go, and he talked the people into letting him go down there. And he had a photographic mind. And he read many of the unpublished information about the stories of Jesus and things that he did. And many of the things, that was one of them, many of the things that he wrote about were things how Jesus took people to the river and did these different things and had healing for them on a physical type of basis from a spiritual point of view. And if you ever want to read them, look it up, I'll view it on the internet under Sigke, S-Z-E-K-E-Y. And Edmund Bordeaux Sigke. And they're fascinating. Now, whether they're true, whether they're not true, I believe they have more possibility of being true than not being true. But whether true or not, I never proclaim. All I say is, it gives us something to think about. And if that can be the touch that moves us from illness to wholeness, that's wonderful. That can be the point that moves us from relief, non-belief to belief. That's wonderful. Just follow your heart. Follow your heart. Now, I've read many books, and I've studied many books, and I've studied many philosophers, and I've studied many psychiatrists and psychologists. I've worked in universities and colleges. I've done all this stuff. I don't have all of their academic degrees, but I have the religious degrees. But that was not important to me. I was not interested in the academia. I was interested in the spiritual impact and the spiritual picture. And this is my life work. It's going around sharing what I believe, what I am. And if anybody believes, wonderful. If nobody believes, I've had a glorious time talking about it. Any other questions, Tommy? Tom, don't you have a word to say to me? Say hi, Herb, or any of you.
don't mean to get...
We appreciate you.
Huh?
We appreciate you.
Thank you. It's really a joy, a privilege, and a pleasure to be here. And we'll be at your home tonight. What are we doing?
Anybody wants some personal time?
Oh, it's personal time. That's right, you said. Yeah, if anybody does, has something that they want to work out on a personal basis, I'm happy to do it. But just remember, then when you're done talking about the problem, just tell me what the solution is. I am 1,050 years old before I move to my next dimension, you say.
I am 1,050 years old before I move to my next dimension.
Unless I change my mind and move later.
Unless I change my mind and move later.
Or never.
Or never.
Mm-hmm. Something like that, too.
And Ken will say, also. Also.
Also. Right, but you see, be yourself and have fun. But if you have anything that you think a few positive words would get you on the right track with, I'm happy to share them. I'm happy to share them.
Jerry said you brought some pie.
Yeah, it's an apple pear crisp.
What is that?
There's an apple pear crisp.
An apple pear crisp, and I presume it's a pie, huh? Oh, well, I'm here.
It's very good, but you can talk about that, but you
can't
have to eat it.
Because
I'm not taking it all.
I'm here.
Would you like
that? Cut me a piece.
I would
love. Lovely. Yeah, that's nice, isn't it? That
sounds good, doesn't it?
I'll go with your piece.
Good. Good.
How do you
good.
Spell Edward's last name?
Don't fall down.
Fall down.
Edmund Van Rodolf Sager, the real pretty name.
Well, I can share them. I stick the baba. I stick the baba in my pocket.
Isn't that crazy? He owns the Golden Door, and he owns La Fuerte down in Mexico, and he died. And his wife took over.
Did it a website?
I'm sure there's a website, yeah. But let me write that down for you, which may help you. Oh, yeah, you see this.
Good. Pick those myself.
Where did
you go?
Okay, let's go. Okay. Okay. ESS or ESS. Okay. So, the Essene, just look up the Essene, because he started the church in Essene.
I am delighted.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. You are
excellent. I see why.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I don't
want
these things, but I make our dog. Here's just some that we have a couple of jets around. I know, right? I know. And then all the jets that we have in mind.
Yeah, that's what she said. No, what I meant by stick.
Amazing.
So proud of you.
That's
take up one of my parts here on the council.
You are fabulous.
You are wonderful. So, amazing.
Do whatever comes naturally to you, probably. Never let anything disturb you. I said, very fine. How are you?
I have a question. And I don't want to bother you this evening because I know that you... But I have a problem with my students, and I have a lot of them.
How was your afternoon doing? Okay, what? That's super. As a single, I'm not very friendly. I teach right here, and you know, take away things with sacred cows and stuff like that, and, you know, sacred cows.
Yes.
And then they say, but, like, people say, well, I'm in trouble with my son, you know, children, and what am I going to do, and how am I going to have it? Always, you know, but not your children being in trouble. It's your own attitude. If you can just let go, and see that that's just not being a concern. And whatever you're doing, or as long as you're enjoying it, you're happy people, and you're wonderful people, then, just as long as people, in their business, you say, what's wrong with 14, or whatever, you know, that's not a point.
Give us a call.
It's not a matter of age. It's a matter of you, yourself. And you, your daughter, created and stood up, doing all the things that make them feel smart, all the things that make them feel fulfilled, all the things that make them feel nice, feel rewarded, is all in order. And then you let go. But if you need to think, they're not happy, you think they have problems, you think that they need you, then you're creating them. Even though they may call you all the time, or they may not call you, even though they may do whatever they do, you're creating a condition of thinking that they need you. And you don't need them. You need them. And once you release them, and you tell them, hey, you're fantastic, you're glorious, you're blinded by the inner light, you're doing everything perfect, and everything you're doing is wonderful.
Yes.
Huh.
I don't think so.
Hey, you better learn to lie a little bit.
How can you lie?
You had better learn to lie a little bit.
How can you lie about it?
You have better learn to lie. You are working with yourself. And pretty soon, as you begin to see the circumstances in your world, in your son, in your life, as whole and perfect, they will be that way. It's not that you make them happen. It's that you create them in your world that way. And they will be. One of the three problems. So, two three problems. You need to change that. And right away, and all of a sudden. And so I said to Ellen, I said, Ellen, I don't want you to go over and second this. I don't want you to go over and come to terms with these things. Ellen, I want you to do one thing. Please, then, let us talk to your father. In the street. See his daughter, who is in a wheelchair and the age of 7 body of coming over. See her talents behind him. See him be peaceful instead of peaceful. I've solved everything for you now. I've done everything you can understand. So I don't need to see him as this wonderful.
It's wonderful, great, and fantastic. Thank you. But I really should have done this other way. He said, I really should have straightened up. And she goes, "Look, you follow me. We love you. We see you, see you smile. Your family, wonderful, you're all in our prayers. Thank you."
No, no, it's everything. It was very, very cool. And all I did was draw on the time.
You don't work for the problem. You work for the, sort of the condition around the problem. Peace, kindness, right action, love, joy. If you're working the problem, then you expiate the problem in such a manner that you make it work. But you are getting your emotional stuff in the way. So what? So what? Softy, so what? And don't feel unhappy with yourself for saying no.
I don't.
I have people in prison. And they have the same as
they get married, they got a little child, and they can't pay the rent.
He gets nothing. I send him a little money to his house, medicine, and stuff like that. He takes part of that money, if not all, he sends it to his kid to pay a $8,000 rent, and $50. I said, "Don't do that. But they won't have it." And I said, "No. Let him not have it right away. Let him stumble right away. And let him make up your mind that you go to the doctor and he will keep it up. And then they'll come to him. You don't need to do anything in the center. So maybe you go for welfare. Maybe you go for welfare. You've got to get yourself out of there because, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. You are there switching here, but not there." Well, maybe that's not a bad idea either. Maybe it's not a bad idea. And don't worry about getting out of town. Go someplace to do something. Don't leave something. If you run away from yourself, and you don't think that you're doing that, if you run away from yourself, you're going to hate yourself. If you go to do something, that's great.
I don't mind going there. I love going someplace.
Well,
nothing I
say
even
here. Well, you don't have to leave here. You can keep us out of here. But the thing is, if you go to help you put order to your life, then go. No. Don't you tell me it's the only way to go, because that means you're running. Why are you going somewhere? Now, maybe you aren't telling me. Where are you going to go? Say it, please.
Okay,
Phoenix. Thank you. Going to go to Phoenix, sorry. What are you going to do in Phoenix? You going to get a dancing line or something?
No, I'm
going to
be an airbag.
Have you taken the course yet? No? Then you are going to Phoenix to take the course of being a flight attendant. And is there something wrong with that? Sounds pretty good to me. All right.
Well,
now, you're going to do something. And you're going to feel a lot better about you. Now, you're going to go and take this course as well. And you may change your mind. You may take the course and you say, "Hey, I think I'll go for president of the airline. The flight attendant is okay, but I got college if that happens. You can do it."
Yeah, but I love the
chapter.
I'm never fine. Bring his family and call me.
You don't need a gun. Go forward if you do
that. I would not.
Absolutely.
That's something I never thought about. Because it's just not in me to be dishonest.
Well, no, that's something to
tell. Sure it is. He's going to say, "Where are you going? I'm not telling you."
That's right.
That's not dishonest. That's making a choice.
That's the thing. I love you too much to tell you.
Then
I love you. You don't even have to tell me that. You can just make all your plans, all your arrangements, and then send them a note as you leave town and say, son, I'm off on an adventure and I'll be gone for a while and I'll let you know where I am when I decide to let you know where I am. But just remember, I'm not even happy to be in the land. And thank you for loving me so much and wanting to be in my world so much. And he does love you in the world. And he loves to forget you and he loves you to forget. And you love to have him do it. Yes, you do. That's why you created him doing that all these years. Because when you're really there, if somebody wants to rape you, you can say, kill me or no rape me, whatever you want. I'm there. I will not participate. And they say, that's not what we get that, yeah. But the thing is, you don't have the strength within you to say, hey, I'm not going to take part in this any longer. You don't have to tell him when you come to church. You don't have to tell him what you're going to do. But the thing is, you always thought you did before you could tell him. And that's the third thing. It's wasting his energy and his. Now, let me ask you this question without any motherly thought about it. I'm going to be answering this. Is your son brilliant, intelligent, and man? Yes, he's definitely. Yes. He's kind to you all these years. No. But no, he's a brilliant, intelligent man. Is he able to handle himself? Okay. As soon as you are not available to be there, he'll be able to handle himself. As long as you're there, then do what I am. And it's going to be there. How is it, Mike? And what do you think?
We're dealing with the exact
same
identical.
Thing.
Identical.
Mm-hmm.
Identical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Identical.
Well, look, my son reached out to me, and so he started the organization, and he helped me start the organization, because he was there, and as he helped me start the organization, he has lived with me and worked with me, and I said, now, Mark, you have to do a little bit of work on the university. Mark, yeah. Yeah, do a little work on the university. Yeah, to hold and run out the mailing list to me and things like that. Otherwise, you can build your airplanes and play your games and stuff like that. Well,
anyway, it's not.
And then we had a seminar. And they had mentioned it to you. And in the seminar, it's a couple of girls came to the tent and put around the path and they had to move them off the path and next thing you know, up on top of the mountain for the first time in life, sleeping with a girl at the age of 5. And then they came around and said, I'm going to get married. And I said, okay, fine. And so then they lived with me. And I took care of them. I housed them. I fed them. I took care of them. And they didn't do anything else. They didn't do anything to help. We leased the plow to put an airstrip on the property. We did that just for him. 2 acres I had for him. Beautiful. I mean, I was a very good dad. But I ran my organization too. And then he got married. And then what comes after that? Prince. And, you know, and so then they had a baby. That's the baby, my grandson, Paul. You know. And they couldn't live in the field of the big motorhome that I had. They had to have a motorhome. So they bought a motorhome with what money. I have no idea what that is, how they had it. So then the next thing I know, I said, well, Mark, I got to get to this guy, I got to do these things here, but you and him want to do it together. They didn't.
I love you.
27 years old, whatever you want to do. And so I said to him, Mike, I think it's time for you to go.
Yeah, you're kicking me out?
No.
I said, no. I said, I think time for you. He said, you're kicking me out. I said, yeah, this time, I'm kicking you out. He says, he didn't say, but we started this together, but we did this. So then I said, I want you out of here by New Year's if you want to. I want you to do this and do that and keep going and so forth. And so his wife, my
says, we gotta leave, we gotta do this together.
She's, I've been married several times, you know, before I married you, and I got to take you all the different colleges. And she was, I know how it is, she didn't help, she was no help, you know. And
yeah,
so,
exactly.
And so I said, you're going, and she knew she was going. And so they went. And the first thing they did, he went in town and got a job building model airplanes for a company that made it for Boeing and for the big companies, you know, like that. And it was really quite nice. And pretty good. And then he got set up to starting to design his own airplanes and get people to work with him and make it available. And he was going to move up to another city. And his wife did not go. He was 5 years, the kid was 5 years old. And he says, I'm going. She said, I'm not. So he got to work. And so then he went off to do his own thing. And he thinks I'm the greatest dad in the world now because he's got his act together. But he was ready to, you know, shoot me. He knew he had nothing, no reason to. And he was very unhappy, but he got over it.
He asked him if I'm a little terrible in the world because I don't care.
Well, that's just good. My son probably felt that too. But don't worry about it.
No, but he's capable like your son. He didn't no. Like school, he didn't like any of that stuff, he didn't want to do it. He makes wonderful car bodies. I know he can do wonderful fiberglass. Will he do it? We've got the shop, we've got the capabilities, but he makes just enough to pay the electrical bill, and just enough to pay the gas bill, and just enough to pay the gas bill.
That's okay. Let him know.
So he's
trying
to find the
second
and I keep having
to come in. Well, that's because you think he's here, he's
not cool.
Sure. Well, I don't want to
see the children's father.
So,
I get
that.
And
then
you're
the
children's
father. Can you really know it's true?
Just remember this. Who knows? What's your number is?
Well, they don't have everything they need for good
bodybuilding. Just remember this. You cannot be there forever. Then stop now while they're young enough to make the decision to be standing on their own feet.
He's 37 years old.
That's okay. And hey.
No, it's fine. You're right.
But you are crying for yourself, not him. You are not sorry for those kids. His kids. You're not sorry for anything. You're just sorry for yourself. So stop doing that. Because nobody cares when you cry for yourself. When you laugh for yourself, we're all there to pat you on the back and help you.
That's what I want.
Then let's go for it, babe.
Huh? I don't have any problem with that.
Then go for it. You're a fantastic lady. You're a fantastic lady. Okay.
There's your little thing. There's your little recorder.
Oh, yes, I should turn it off.
Yeah. Oh, you got all this good conversation.
Yeah, it goes on forever.
Yeah.